Chapter 1 Of Orcs and Dwarves. Hundreds of dwarven crossbows were leveled atop the fallen logs of what used to be Dark Arrow Keep. A monstrous band approached, a score of the ugly orcs, a handful of goblins, and a frost giant. And a dark elf named Driz Do'Urden.
Lorgru, Cynethane explained to the dwarf kings. Lorgru, who would have become the next King Obuld had not Warlord Hartusk usurped the throne.
The retreating orcs flocked to him in the mountains, so said Drizzt,
Catti Bree put in. And Cynethane, whose scouts had told her the same thing, nodded her agreement.
Lorgru ain't for shielding the dogs from me, boys, King Harnoth proclaimed. If he's looking to take up the fight, Adbar'll finish it for him.
Aye, but I'd like his ugly head on a pike outside our western gate,
Orethio Spikes added, and other nearby dwarves nodded at that. King Emerus and Brunner exchanged concerned glances. They had known this wasn't going to be easy from the first reports that the orcs were congregating around the deposed Lorgru in the spine of the world. Brunner moved up to the central barricade and climbed atop the log.
Put up your bows, boys,
he called down the line after a cursory scan of the incoming forces.
No threat to be found. Darned elf'd kill 'em all before ye let ye first bolt fly if it came to fightin'.
The dwarves around him relaxed somewhat, but grumbled too, more than a little disappointed that the meeting would most likely go off as planned. Brunner turned and held his hand up high. Drizzt responded in kind and walked his unicorn mount, Andahar, around in front of the leading orcs, halting their progress.
Ye with me?
Brunner asked, turning around. The other three dwarf kings, Catti Bree and Cynethane of the Elves, moved to join him. Alina Brightlance, who had been given the title and role as emissary of Silvery Moon and Everlund, rode forth as well. Out from the other ranks rode Drizzt upon Andahar, along with an orc upon a snarling warg, a goblin shuffling fast along behind them, and the frost giant pacing them with its long strides.
Who will speak for the Alliance of Lorwar?
Drizzt asked, purposefully and pointedly evoking the alliance that had crumbled with the march of the Kingdom of Many Arrows. All turned to Brunner.
King Brunner,
said Emerus Warcrow. He turned a sly eye upon his opponents, particularly upon Lorgru.
Aye, that Brunner, he explained to the visibly startled orc. The one what signed the Treaty of Garam's Gorge with Obuld I them years and years ago.
I had thought King Brunner long dead,
the orc leader replied.
Well, ye thought wrong, I'm guessing, Brunner answered and stepped forward. Is yourself speaking for them goblins and giants, too?
You are Brunner?
Lorgru asked, incredulous, for surely the dwarf standing in front of him was very young.
Don't matter who I be, the dwarf answered. I'm speaking for him, and they're agreeing, eh?
Behind him, the others all nodded. That seemed to satisfy the orc, who nodded, though still wore a confused expression.
I speak for Many Arrows, he said. The orcs fleeing the field have returned to me,
Lorgru explained to Brunner.
Never would I have sanctioned such a march against your people or such a war. It is not the way of Obuld.
And where's yourself been this last year a-fightin'?
Brunner asked, suspicious.
In the mountains, in exile,
Lorgru answered. Drizzt looked at his red-bearded friend and nodded solemnly.
My kingdom was stolen from me,
Lorgru continued.
By factions determined to return to the warlike ways of the orcs, I reject those ways. She,
he pointed to Cynethane,
is alive and free by my choice, though I could have ordered her killed legally, even by your own laws, for intruding upon my kingdom.
All eyes went to Cynethane.
King Lorgru speaks truly,
Cynethane confirmed.
He would have been within his rights to execute me, but he did not.
Are ye expecting cheers?
King Harnoff said with a growl, looking from Cynethane to Lorgru.
I expect nothing, Lorgru replied. I ask for a truce.
A truce? Now that we got your dogs running,
Arnoth argued.
A truce! So that you can put them all back together and come hunting dwarfs once more.
Brunner speaks for us, King Arnoth,
Emerus Warcrown said, an edge of anger coming into his tone. Arnoth returned his angry stare, but Conorad Braunanvil was quick to back up King Emerus, as was Alina Brightlance.
Bah! But I'm not needing ye,
Arnoth grumbled at length.
The boys of Adbar alone can finish the job. Aye, but ye won't,
Brunner said in a tone that brooked no debate. The red-bearded dwarf spun on Lorgru.
A truce you're wanting?
The orc nodded.
You want us to leave yourself and your boys alone in the mountains, do ye?
Another nod.
Well, ye hear me good then, King Lorgru, or Obuld, or whatever name ye mean to put on your ugly face. Yourself and yours ain't welcome in the Silver Marches anymore. There's no kingdom of many arrows. And any of your boys that come out of the mountains south of this ruined keep's north wall, or in the lands against the wall, or anywhere else in the Silver Marches will be counted as raiders and treated as such. We'll be watching ye, don't ye doubt, and first fight's last fight, for don't ye doubt that we'll be coming in to find ye.
King Lorgru glanced around like a caged animal, a look that changed to unmistakably crestfallen, as if only then did he realize that the dreams of his ancestors were lost to him. There would be no resurrection of Dark Arrow Keep, no return to the relationships and treaties the orcs had known before the rise of Warlord Hartusk. He wanted to argue, they could all see, and even started to rebut. But he bit back his argument and accepted Brunner's terms with a nod.
Perhaps one day we will prove ourselves worthy of your trust, he said.
I trust an orc corpse, said King Arnoth. So there's a start to an understanding. Ye stay in your holes, Brunner warned. Ye stay clear of the Silver Marches, or don't ye doubt that we'll hunt ye down every one and kill ye to death, every one.
King Lorgru nodded and held forth his hand, but Brunner didn't take it. It seemed to all looking on that it took every ounce of control the fiery dwarf could manage to stop him from leaping out and murdering Lorgru then and there.
What of yourself?
Brunner demanded of the goblin. The diminutive creature glanced around nervously.
We are done the war!
It shrieked and cowered. Brunner's gaze shifted to the frost giant, tall and proud, and clearly unbended by the weight of guilt or defeat.
I am Hengreda of Starshine,
he said in his beautiful and resonant voice. He gave a little chuckle.
It seems that I am all that is left of Starshine.
He shrugged, as if that was simply the accepted way of war, which to frost giants it surely was.
I wish to go to Shining White and Jarl Fimmel Orelson, the giant explained. I wish to tell him that the war is ended.
And why would ye wish to do such a thing as that?
A skeptical Brunner asked.
So that Jarl Orelson ends his preparations to continue the war,
Hengreda said with surprising candor.
Are ye saying he's meaning to come back with his boys?
Emerus Warcrown demanded. The frost giant shrugged.
If there is war, Jarl Orelson will fight. If there is war no more, he will not.
Brunner turned back to regard the other dwarf kings before he responded, mostly seeking the approval of King Emerus, who was old and wise and had been through this many times before. When Emerus nodded, the red-bearded dwarf turned back to the frost giant.
Ye go and tell Jarl Orelson what I telled Lorgru here,
Brunner instructed.
He stays away and we'll leave him. We'll leave ye all be. But if a dwarf of the Silver Marches falls to the blade of a frost giant, then tell your Jarl Orelson that we'll be melting Shining White to a puddle, aye, and one red with giant blood, don't ye doubt.
You boast loudly for such a little creature,
Hengreda remarked. Drizzt, Catibri, and all the dwarves around gasped at that, expecting Brunner to spring upon the giant and throttle him. King Arnoth even started forward threateningly, but Brunner swung out an arm and held him back.
Bruno just stood there and smiled, staring at Hengreta for a long, long while.
"Nothing worth saying to the like of yourself," said Bruno. "I telled ye what was what, so do what ye want with it. But take yourself a good look at the field behind us, giant, at the big holes we're filling with dead enemies. You might want to tell your Jarl Orelson about that."
The frost giant snorted derisively.
"And if your sense of honor, or whatever stupid thing's driving ye makes ye think ye're wanting to fight me, then go and deliver the message to Shining White and come back," Brunner offered. "We'll fight it out, me and yourself, just me and yourself. And when we're done, me boys'll dig a hole and put ye in it."
"Brave words, dwarf," the giant replied.
"Not just any dwarf,"
King Emerus said, stepping forward.
"King Brunner Battlehammer, 8th king of Mithril Hall, 10th king of Mithril Hall, who slew Hartusk. So go and run your errands, boy, and ye come back and play. Ye'll get the chance to kill a legend, or think ye'll get the chance, because we're knowing, and yourself should be too, that Brunner'll cut ye down bit by bit and spit in your eye afore he finishes ye."
Through it all, Brunner never blinked, never changed his expression, never seemed anything but calm. Hengreta, though, did blink.
"Aye, I will. I will come back and kill a legend," he said.
But no one, not even Lorgru and the goblin standing beside him, believed him.
"Ye don't come back," Brunner warned Lorgru. "And ye don't get too many of your dogs all in one place, or we'll find ye and break ye. Now get on, get to your holes and stay there."
Lorgru, looking thoroughly defeated, nodded his agreement and led the others away.
"We'll watch for the giant,"
Conrad assured Brunner.
"He won't be back,"
Brunner told him. He noted then the scowl of King Harnoth off to the side and standing beside Emerus, so he moved over to the pair with Conrad in tow.
"Ah, but we erred in letting that dog go,"
Harnoth insisted.
"He's an orc king and they'll swarm about him, and so we're to be knowing war soon enough."
"No," said Sinifane off to the side, and she too moved over to join the impromptu meeting. "Lorgru is not like Hartusk or the other war chiefs. He is the son of Obuld, and traces his bloodline to the first Obuld. He believes in that vision."
"Then he shouldn't have let his dogs come hunting,"
was all that Brunner would say. "King Harnoth wants to push into the mountains to hunt down the orcs," Catibria explained to Drizzt, the two off to the side and watching the small gathering. "Brunner won't let him, and Emerus and Conrad back Brunner. Harnoth may still go. He is outraged about the death of his brother and will never rest easy knowing the orcs are so close." Drizzt spent a long while staring at her, measuring her tone and the tenseness within her strong frame.
"You agree with Harnoth," he said.
Catibri matched his stare but didn't respond.
"Because of the goddess," Drizzt reasoned. "You think it is your duty to hunt down and kill the orcs, one and all."
"We did not start this war."
"But we ended it," Drizzt replied. "Lorgru won't come back."
"What of his son?" Catibri asked. "Or his grandson, or the next warlord who usurps the throne with visions of glory in his eyes. Do you mean to kill every orc in all the world?" Catibri just stared at him again, and Drizzt knew then that he and his wife would spend many hours on this topic in the coming days and months. Many unpleasant hours. Drizzt turned back to the dwarves and nodded at Brunner.
"You think he's told them yet?"
Even as he asked the question, King Harnoth cried out in dismay.
"He has now," Catibri dryly replied.
Brunner had confided his plans to the couple. He was going west with as many soldiers as the 3 dwarven citadels of the Silver Marches would afford him. Brunner meant to reclaim Gontalgrim from the drow and any other inhabitants who might have made the place a home. Across the way, Harnoth had become quite animated, waving his arms and stomping in circles. Drizzt and Catibri went over to lend support to their dwarf friend.
"Why don't ye just empty all the derned citadels and let the derned orcs come walking in?"
Arnoth roared.
Never said I'd empty any,
Brunner calmly replied.
4,000, he said,
King Emerus added solemnly, his demeanor cutting at Harnoth as much as his words.
We've twice that number, and half again right here on the field. And we've all left worthy garrisons back behind us. 4,000,
said Harnoth.
That orc swine you just sent walking got 10 times that number, 20 times that number.
And you've got Silvery Moon and Everlund,
Alina Brightlance remarked, all the dwarves turning to regard her with surprise, and in a case of all but fiery Harnoth with gratitude.
We'll not be abandoning you,
Alina vowed.
And we will rebuild Sundabar, do not doubt. The Alliance will be stronger than ever, if the 3 dwarven citadels and the Moonwood Elves so desire it.
Aye,
Brunner, Emerus, and Conorat all said together, while Sinéfain nodded.
My people will serve as your eyes in the north, Sinéfain added. If the orcs begin to stir, we will know, and you will know. And any march they might make will be hampered by the sting of elven arrows, do not doubt.
The dogs almost won this time,
King Harnoth warned.
And now we'd be down 4,000 dwarves, and with Sundabar a shell of what she was, and with so many others dead, all a Nesme dead. Who'll stop them this time if they come calling?
They didn't get into the halls afore, and they won't next time if there's air to be a next time,
Brunner insisted.
And now we're knowing the threat, and there are ways we can better prepare.
Some of us always knew, King Brunner,
Harnoth said. And it was clearly meant as a jab at the dwarf who had signed the Treaty of Garam's Gorge.
Are ye thinking to drive us apart, King of Adbar?
King Emerus was quick to retort.
'Cause aye, that's what your words are doing now. And don't ye doubt that Felbar'll be standing with Mithril Hall if ye keep on with it.
As will the cities of Silvery Moon and Everlund,
Alina added with an equally grim tone. King Harnoth, young and full of pride, started to respond in an animated and angry fashion, but Orethio's spikes put a hand on his shoulder to calm him, and when the young king snapped his head about to regard the wild dwarf, Orethio nodded and led him off to the side.
He's a stubborn one, Catti Bree remarked.
He lost his father not long ago, and his brother was slain in the war, Drizzt reminded. As were many of his most important advisers. He sits atop a throne now, alone and unsure. He knows that he erred many times in the last year, and that we saved him from certain doom.
Then he might be offering some gratitude and a dose of well-earned humility, eh?
Asked Brunner. Drizzt shrugged. He will, but on his terms.
If Adbar refuses our plan, then yourself and meself will raise the army we're needin' to get your quest done, me friend,
King Emerus promised.
We'll not be raising that number without Adbar,
Brunner said.
So we'll go to Mirabar and find more allies, should be thinking that anyway,
said Emerus.
Them boys are Delzoon, and so are your boys in Icewind Dale. We'll get back Gontalgrim, don't ye doubt.
We'll? Drizzt asked, catching on to Emerus's hint.
Much to talk about,
was all the king of Citadel Felbar would say on that subject at that time. Harnoth and Orethio Spikes came back over then, the king of Adbar seeming much less animated.
Me friend here thinks Adbar's holding strong with 2,000 less,
Harnoth explained.
So half your force will be marching under the banner of Citadel Adbar, King Brunner.
No,
Brunner immediately replied, even as the others began to smile and even cheer. All eyes turned sharply on the red-bearded dwarf with his surprising answer.
No banners for Adbar, Felbar, or Mithril Hall,
Brunner explained.
As in the war we just won, we're walking under the flag of our Delzoon blood, the flag of Gontalgrim.
Ain't no flag of Gontalgrim,
Harnoth protested.
Then let's make one,
Emerus Warcrown said with a wide grin. He held up his hand to Harnoth, and after only a slight hesitation, the young king of Adbar took that hand firmly in his own. Brunner, meanwhile, began producing flagons of ale from behind his magical shield, one for each of the 4 dwarf kings assembled on the field.
And so they toasted.
To Gontalgrim!
The work at the ruins of Dark Arrow Keep continued for several 10 days, with a massive orc fortress being stripped down to a watchpost with only a couple of towers left standing. There had been a small debate about whether to dismantle the place or perhaps refit it more to accommodate dwarven sensibilities. But Brunner had pointed out, rightly so, that leaving any semblance of Dark Arrow Keep intact might entice the orcs to try to reclaim it. Reclaiming it, after all, would be a lot easier than rebuilding it from rubble. So they ripped the rest of it down, except the meager watchtowers, and they carried the great logs to the river and floated them downstream, where they could be caught at Mithril Hall and used as fuel for the hearths and forges. The docks, too, were dismantled, as were the surrounding orc villages, now abandoned, erasing all remnants of the Kingdom of Many Arrows from the Silver Marches. As summer turned to fall, the dwarves and their allies marched for their respective homes, with the three citadels pledged to meet throughout the winter months to plan the spring march to the west. "What's troubling you?" Catti Bree asked Regis on that journey to Mithril Hall. Regis had joined in the cheers and drinks and huzzas, of course, but every passing day Catti Bree had watched him and had noted a cloud that often passed over his cherubic face.
"I'm weary, that's all," he said, and she knew he was lying. "It's been a long and difficult year."
"For all of us," Catti Bree said.
"But a year of victory, yes?"
Regis looked over at her, his seat on his pony far below the tall shoulders of Catti Bree's spectral unicorn. His smile was genuine, though, as he quietly offered,
"Huzzah for King Brunner!"
But there was the cloud again, behind his eyes, and as he turned back to the road in front of them, Catti Bree figured it out. "You're not coming to Gontalgrim with us," she stated. In the shadows of his eyes, she didn't have to ask.
"I have said no such thing," Regis replied,
but he didn't look at her when he spoke.
"Nor did you deny it even now."
She watched the halfling's face tighten, though he still would not look over and up at her.
"How long have you known?"
Catti Bree asked a short while later, when it became apparent to her that Regis was simply not going to lead this conversation.
"If Brunner was marching to war in Gontalgrim, and Drizzt was in Cormyr or the Bloodstone Lands, perhaps, what would you do?"
Regis asked.
"What do you mean?" "Would you accompany Brunner on his quest, this latest quest in a perhaps unending line of quests? Or would you desire to find Drizzt once more and resume your life beside him?"
"Donala Topolino," Catti Bree realized then.
"My love for her is no less than yours for Drizzt," Regis explained. "I left her to fulfill my vow, and because I knew my friend Drizzt needed me, and so I traveled from Aglarond halfway across Faerun to Icewind Dale, and stood with you and the others as we found our friend near death."
The woman nodded, her open, sympathetic, and inviting expression prompting him forward.
"And this war we have just won," Regis explained. "It was important, and in truth a continuation of that which we had started those decades ago. I served as steward of Mithril Hall in the days of the first Obuld."
"I remember well, and you served with great honor."
"And so I came back to finish what we started, to complete the circle,"
the halfling explained.
"In both of these duties I nearly died. I'm not afraid to die. I never was, and certainly am not after my time in the enchanted forest of Mialiki."
"But you are afraid that you will never see your beloved Donala again," the woman reasoned.
"This is a dwarf war, the quest of the Delzoon Brotherhood," Regis tried to explain. "I'm not a dwarf. Drizzt has said that taking Gontalgrim from the drow could take years, and then holding it will likely prove to be a task that will stretch for decades. At what point?"
His voice trailed off, the question unasked.
"Have you finished your service?"
Catti Bree finished for him, and Regis finally did look up at her plaintively. Her smile was warm and disarming.
"You have done more than any could ask, my friend. None will judge you for leaving now, though surely we all will miss you." "Brother Afafrenfir is only passing through Mithril Hall," Regis explained, "then going south to Silverymoon and Everlund, and to the south road to Waterdeep.
He has explained as much, that his time here is at its end. Catti Bree agreed. All are grateful for his actions here. For indeed he is credited in no small part in killing the white dragon on the slopes of Fourth Peak. A great ally is Brother Afafrenfir.
From Waterdeep he'll find the tradeway, which I rode with the grinning ponies before I found you on the banks of Mare Dwalden. I will go with him all the way to the port of Suzale, and I'll sail home east to Aglarond while he sails northeast to the city of Procampore and the Bloodstone Lands.
I wish I could dissuade you.
You know that you cannot.
You were in love, Spider Paraffin, Catti Bree said. I only hope that one day I will meet this halfling woman, Donala Topolino, who has so stolen your heart.
You will, Regis vowed. I will lead her to the road of adventure beside me, or so I hope, and that road will lead to Gontalgrim.
It is a wider world than you imagine, I fear. When Wulfgar left us for Icewind Dale, did we not proclaim that we would all meet again?
I did. With Wulfgar, I mean, as did Drizzt.
And? The halfling swallowed hard at that poignant question, for that meeting with Wulfgar in Icewind Dale had been friendly enough, but strangely unfulfilling to all three of them.
Are you saying that I should not return, or that I should not go?
I surely do not want you to go, the woman replied. But no, you have no choice, my dear friend. I have seen you looking east in your quiet moments. We all have. You cannot spend your days wondering about your beloved Donala. You'll always have the companions of the Hole, Spider of Aglarond. Always will you remain one of us, and so always welcomed wherever we are, with open arms and wide smiles and kisses from me, so many kisses.
I tried to be worthy of the companions of the...
Regis started to say, but his voice trailed away. It was becoming very real to him then, Catti Bree knew. He was leaving them, and the weight of that was only now truly descending on his small shoulders. Worthy? You are a hero in every sense of the word. You saved Wulfgar's life in the tunnels south of Mithril Hall twice.
After he came for me.
It is what we do for each other, said Catti Bree. I only wish I could accompany you to Aglarond. Regis nodded and swallowed hard, and forced Catti Bree to look him in the eye, his expression very serious, which confused the woman.
Wulfgar has agreed to come with me,
Regis explained. For a moment, Catti Bree seemed unbalanced, as if she would simply fall off the side of her magically summoned mount. She steadied herself quickly, though, and managed a nod.
He has agreed to stand beside me on my journeys, Regis explained. Perhaps he feels as if our trials together in the Underdark...
He owes you a life debt.
One for which I would never demand payment.
He is happy to repay you. Likely he is happy to find the open road and more conquests of various natures.
Say nothing, I beg you.
Regis was quick to reply, as if Catti Bree's remarks had reminded him of something.
Well, we will go to Drizzt and Brunner together, but for now it is our secret, agreed?
Why? Regis motioned forward with his chin, leading Catti Bree's gaze to Wulfgar and to the Knight Commander of Silvery Moon.
Alina Brightlance is quite smitten with him,
Regis explained. Perhaps she will go with you. Regis was shaking his head before Catti Bree finished the thought.
Her duty is to Silvery Moon. There are rumors that she will be given command of Sundabar when it is rebuilt.
You have chosen love, the woman reminded.
Perhaps she... I do not think Wulfgar would want her to come,
Regis explained.
He's different now. I don't believe he desires a family. He already had one in his previous life. Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, he knew them all. He outlived many of them. He had already mentioned to me that his biggest regret in the road I have chosen is that he'll not travel with you back through Longsaddle.
Penelope Harple, Catti Bree said with a laugh. Regis shrugged.
Our secret?
One we have to share soon with Drizzt and Brunner, that we can all properly prepare to say goodbye. The halfling nodded and turned his focus once more on the road ahead. He had to do that, Catti Bree knew. to make sure she didn't see the tears that were welling in his eyes. Later that day, the great marching force split, with the elves turning east to the River Cerberin, where their boats waited to ferry them and the thousands from Citadel Adbar across to the Glimmerwood. King Emerus and his charges of Citadel Felbar could have gone that way as well, but he opted to march farther south, to the Cerberin Bridge, beside his friend Brunner, so they could further discuss this great adventure that awaited the dwarves in the most ancient Delzoon home of all. That very night, Catti Bree and Regis found Brunner, Wulfgar, and Drizzt alone by the fire. They took their seats beside their friends, with food and drink all about.
"Call in Guinevere,"
Regis bade Drizzt. The drow looked at him curiously, for it seemed a strange request.
"Ain't none in the world to attack the army about us," Brunner said.
But Regis looked to Drizzt and nodded. And Catti Bree did too, and so the drow pulled out his onyx figurine and brought in the sixth member of the Companions of the Hall. All gathered then. Regis and Wulfgar announced their plans, and Brunner's cry of dismay split the night and turned many nearby eyes their way.
"It's me greatest quest,"
the dwarf protested on the edge of desperation.
"I can no be doing it without ye."
"Yes, you can," Catti Bree answered. "We can. Drizzt and I will be beside you, and thousands of your sturdy kin as well." Brunner looked at her sharply, clearly feeling he had been deceived, or as if he was the last to know.
"They have to go," Catti Bree insisted. "Their business, Regis's business in particular, is no less urgent than your own. More urgent than your own, I say, for Gontalgrim has been there for thousands of years, and will be for thousands more, no doubt, but Denala."
She looked at Regis, who nodded his gratitude.
"Your girl?"
Brunner asked incredulously, as if the thought of chasing a woman when such a grand adventure lay in front of them was perfectly ludicrous.
"A woman I will make my wife," said Regis. "Perhaps we will name our first child Brunner, though I fear his beard will disappoint you."
Brunner started to argue, but the halfling's words turned that into a sputter, then a laugh. And so they ate, and so they drank, and many cheers and flagons of ale were lifted into the night air, and many promises that they would see each other again, in Gontalgrim, likely. This was no goodbye, they all declared, but merely a temporary parting of the ways. How many have made those often futile promises?
"Are we disturbing your private gathering?" came an unexpected voice. Jarlaxle walked into the firelight, flanked by the sisters Tazmikella and Ilnazara.
"We've room for more," Drizzt said quickly, before Brunner could protest. He slid along the log he had taken as a bench, making room for the newcomers.
"A drink?"
Drizzt asked, looking to Brunner, who scowled for a heartbeat, but produced another flagon. Ilnazara handed the first flagon along to Jarlaxle and explained,
"I prefer blood,"
as Brunner reached behind his shield once more. The dwarf stopped and stared at her.
"You walk openly among the dwarves and others," Drizzt said quietly to Jarlaxle.
"The war is over. And so I have come to try to mend relations between the races, ostensibly," the drow mercenary replied and took a sip of the ale. "Though, of course, I am here as a spy for Matron Mother Bayenri, to whom I will, of course, provide a complete accounting."
Wulfgar bristled, and Brunner hopped up at that declaration. To which Jarlaxle merely shrugged and smiled and looked to Drizzt.
"My use of course two times in one sentence did not properly relay my sarcasm."
"It's been a long year," Drizzt replied.
"Ah," Jarlaxle agreed. "Well, good dwarf and man-giant, do be at ease," he said. "I will tell Menzo Baranzon nothing more than that which they already know. The dwarves won, the orcs fled, the human kingdom will be built anew, and for all of their efforts, this war Menzo Baranzon, prodded onto the Silver Marches, has done little more than strengthen the bonds of the Alliance of Lorwar."
"That's what you're meaning to tell them, eh?"
asked Brunner.
"Aye,"
Jarlaxle answered. in exchange for a small favor.
Brunner straightened at that and cast a sour look Drizzt's way, but Drizzt held up his hand, begging the dwarf for patience.
I have two associates, both known to you, who are intrigued at the prospect of your intended reclamation of Gontalgrim, the drow explained.
Them too?
Brunner asked, pointing to the sisters.
Try not to be so foolish, Taz Mikella said.
Good dwarf, we are already long bored, Ilnazara agreed.
Not them, Jarlaxle explained. But dwarves, including the newest member of Bregan de Earth. Both have asked for a leave that they might march beside you to your homeland. And given all that they have done, I would be a terrible leader and a worse friend to refuse them.
He lifted his hand and motioned, and into the firelight hopped Ambergris and Aphrogate, holding hands and grinning hopefully.
You want me to take these too?
Brunner asked.
Powerful allies, Jarlaxle said.
Brunner seemed at a loss. He looked from the drow to the dwarves to Drizzt, then back and forth again.
Aye, I can no deny the truth of that. I've been granted back me old home of Felbar, said Aphrogate.
And meself can return to Adbar and all's forgiven,
added Amber Gristle O'Mall of the Adbar O'Malls.
And we're owing ye all for that.
Aye, and we'd rather be taking the road aside ye, Aphrogate said, for evermore.
And what of yourself? Drizzt asked Jarlaxle. The mercenary shrugged.
I've to report to the matron mother, of course, and then I have another road before me.
He's off to find Ephron, don't ye know?
Ambergris interjected.
Aye, to find the poor boy and give him a hug for meself.
Do we have an agreement? Jarlaxle asked.
And if I'm saying no?
Brunner asked.
Then I will report the same tale to the matron mother, but you will have lost a pair of fine and powerful companions.
Brunner looked to Drizzt.
What says yourself, elf?
In a fight, those are two dwarves I would want on my side.
Good enough, then, and glad to have ye,
Brunner said to the pair, who grinned all the wider, bowed, and moved back out into the darkness between the campfires.
And now I must be off,
Jarlaxle said, draining his flagon, tipping his cap and rising.
Farewell and not goodbye, for I've no doubt that our roads will cross again, my friends.
He started to bow, but Taz Mikella grabbed him by the sleeve and with frightening ease pulled him back down to sit beside her. She began whispering in his ear and pointed across the firelight to Wulfgar. Jarlaxle laughed. The big man scowled.
My friend here is wondering if you are in need of a fine bed this night, Jarlaxle said.
The stunned Wulfgar seemed at a loss, muttering, repeatedly.
She's a dragon boy, Brunner said to him.
Why does everyone keep saying that as if it is a bad thing? Jarlaxle asked.
He looked to Wulfgar and grinned slyly. Enticing, yes? But Regis answered before Wulfgar could.
Alina is not far, and she is expecting you, he reminded.
And the growing smirk disappeared from the big man's face.
I, with sincere gratitude,
Wulfgar stammered, but the sisters laughed at him and stood up, hoisting Jarlaxle between them and tugging him away.
I will have to suffer greater trials for your absence, Jarlaxle said with feigned regret.
He tried to bow again, but was off the ground, lifted over the log, and easily slung over Ilnazara's shoulder.
Alas, he said with great lament, and he awkwardly managed to tip his outrageous hat.
Dragons,
Catty Bree said incredulously, and she looked to Wulfgar and shook her head with disgust.
It does present an intriguing, Drizzt kidded, and he ducked fast from Catty Bree's good-natured slap.
To Wulfgar, though, there remained a look of clear interest as he watched the trio depart. He considered the beautiful sisters and what he, surprisingly, found to be an intriguing offer. And he looked, too, at Jarlaxle, envying the carefree, self-serving drow.
Had Jarlaxle found what Wulfgar sought? Horns blew, and the cadence of a drumbeat was matched perfectly by the 1,000 dwarves of Citadel Felbar, stomping across the Cerbern Bridge, escorted away by the cheering of their battlehammer kin. "He's supporting you with everything he can," Drizzt remarked to Brunner as they watched Emerus Warcrown depart.
"He's a good man, is me friend Emerus," Brunner replied solemnly. "He'll be generous when we meet at the year's turn. Many who are marching beside himself will be from Citadel Felbar, don't ye doubt?"
"I don't," Drizzt agreed. Another horn blew, this one to the south, and Drizzt noted that Brunner swallowed hard at this one, the muster call from the knights in silver. Drizzt, too, breathed a long sigh.
"Me girl's with him," Brunner remarked. "Let's go and say our goodbyes."
His voice trailed off, and the sturdy dwarf bit back a chortle. He looked up at Drizzt and nodded, and the two started off. They found Catti Bree with Wulfgar and Regis a few moments later, Alina and Brother Afafrenfir standing off to the side, waiting patiently. Brunner began pulling flagons of ale out from behind his shield the moment he arrived, handing them around to the other four, then lifting his own up high.
"To the companions of the hall!"
the dwarf said in a strong and loud voice, loud enough so that many nearby turned to regard the gathering of the five friends.
"If ne'er we're to meet again, then know in your hearts that few have known a friendship as deep."
Regis winced at that, and it seemed to Drizzt as if he was on the verge of breaking, perhaps renouncing his intended journey to Aglarond.
"We'll meet again,"
Drizzt said to assure them all, particularly the halfling, though in truth he doubted his own words.
"Aye, in this world or the next," Catti Bree confidently added.
Drizzt noted that this time both Wulfgar and Regis winced. He understood. They toasted and drank, toasted some more and drank some more, though the horns to muster were growing more frequent and more urgent in the south. Finally, Alina Brightlance walked over.
"We are off,"
she told Wulfgar and Regis. Hugs and kisses, and the five left, all with tears in their eyes. When he hugged Drizzt, Regis whispered,
"I have to go,"
into the drow's ear, as if asking permission.
"I know,"
the drow said.
And so they did, moving down the riverbank to the south with the soldiers of Silvery Moon and Everlund, leaving Drizzt and Catti Bree and Brunner to contemplate their long road ahead without the pair.